Hey guys, this is Tony Vicinda here. A quick invitation before we begin today's podcast. If you're enjoying The Threshold so far, we would love to have you go to iTunes or whatever podcast listening software you use and rate and review our podcast. We've learned a lot over these last few episodes, and the audio quality and production value that you're seeing in this podcast really are becoming the new benchmark of what we're trying to achieve here. So now we feel comfortable asking you after a few episodes, if you'd be so kind to go rate and review our podcast. We're always looking for feedback on how we can do better. And also as an incentive, over the course of the next few weeks, anybody who rates or reviews with an honest 5-star rating, we're going to enter into a drawing to win some prizes from Catholic Balm Co. Catholic Balm Co. makes beard balm, lotion bars, and lip balms. They're actually made with my own two hands, and all the money goes to help support Catholic youth ministry in the work of this podcast and other projects that we work on. So if you do us a favor and go and rank The Threshold Podcast in the iTunes store or on whatever platform you listen to podcasts on. Thanks, and here we go. In a time when religious conversations can seem tense or even taboo, I sit down each week with a different guest to talk about their beliefs, what shaped those beliefs, and why they really matter. My name's Tony Vicinda, and this is The Threshold. Welcome back, everybody. This is Tony Vicinda. I'm joined live this week by my good friend, Father Colin Parrish, as we sit down with Sam Sorich. I met Sam a little while ago. Sam is an aspiring van dweller, ex-seminarian, and filmmaker with Spirit Juice and Glass Darkly Films. I'm really excited to sit down with Sam and talk about what really matters. Hi, Sam. How's it going today?
It's going well.
What's up? How are you doing?
Hey, Father Parrish.
So I'm really excited to sit down and talk to Sam today for a lot of different reasons, but I met Sam, I think, for the first time ever in San Jose, California, really just about 8 months ago. Father Parrish, how long have you known Sam for?
Sam would periodically come through the seminary that I was at in Chicago, Mundelein, and do filming for, at the time, Father Barron and cronies.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so he had, like, these really cool people he was always with.
Was Rob one of them?
Is Rob have the... Wait a minute, this is a podcast. I can't say what I was going to
say. I mean, you can. So we're talking about Rob, who's head of Spirit Juice Studios.
Yeah.
Huge honking beard, gorgeous family, beautiful man.
Yeah. And all those things. And then also just in George... George's now wife.
The best part of our podcast is when we sit around and you try to remember people's names.
I know. Well, anyway, they're just really cool people. They seemed like normal, like Catholics. What I would perceive as normal Catholics or right. Catholics that I, actually let me put it this way, people that I want to be normal Catholics. Who were Catholic.
Yeah, the type of people who people might not think of as normal Catholics, but are actually a significant population of normal Catholicism.
No. I mean, they had tattoos and cool haircuts.
Oh, okay.
Like me.
So the people who get stared at when they go to Mass every week, just a little bit.
Yeah.
All
right. Like the kind of people that grandma goes up to and says, "Are you a Satanist?"
All right. So I also met Sam because of Rob and the Spirit Juice crew, because they were at San Jose for the National Conference on Catholic Youth Ministry. And we had this sweet VW van in the back of our booth for Project YM that was kind of our recording studio for the weekend. We were doing some filmed content for an online project we do. And Sam came up and asked me if I was a van dweller. And I was able to contextually put together that that's probably people who lived in vans, but I had to let him down and tell him no, he had just rented the van for the weekend. And he let me know that him and I think at that point, fiance, they wanted to be van dwellers. So Sam, my question for you is, how did van dwelling work out?
Yeah, I'm kind of like a failed van dweller. I did a little stint a couple years ago for 6 months in Chicago, and I bought this black Town and Country, and I was just kind of living in Chicago in this van, and it was probably a little naive, but it was a really great experience. And then I had to stop just because it was it was a little overwhelming for me to have so much alone time. And then, I always kept it in the back of my head, like, I want to keep doing this. And then, when I started dating, my now wife, this is something I kept, you know, bringing up. Hey, why buy a house? Why do the whole American dream thing? And, my work allows me to be anywhere, film, anything, and to meet a bunch of people. So, we bought a Sprinter van and we started working on a documentary, but then it broke down. So I have a van and it's in my parents' driveway waiting to be lived in again. But right now we're just living in Chicago.
You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with living in a van in your parents' driveway, Sam.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there was a TV show at one point that had a character concept built entirely around, I believe, a cousin who lived in a van. And the TV show was called Step by Step, and I believe it was Cousin Cody lived in a van in the driveway. And he was pretty much everybody's favorite character, I think, on the show.
Is your spirit animal Matt Foley motivational speaker?
Absolutely.
Awesome. So, Sam, you mentioned your work. Tell people what you do for a living.
Sure. Yeah, I'm a filmmaker, and I freelance. I have my own company called Glass Darkly Films, but I also freelance with a bunch of different production companies in Chicago, including, like you guys said, Spirit Juice Studios, which I've been at as a freelancer for 4 years now. So a lot of it's Catholic media, but a lot of it's like corporate bullshit too. So
awesome. So I'd love to know why you said Glass Darkly. Is that the name of your company?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What does that come from?
So it has a couple different iterations. One is like, it's from Corinthians 13, where now we see through a glass darkly and then face to face. It's also, a very good film by Mark Bergman. And to me, it's just kind of like an existential, it's used in different kind of connotations, but basically, like, there's something about reality that we're kind of, we can't see the whole picture, whatever that is. And I like the interpretation that then we see face to face isn't some kind of eschatological thing, but it's actually the face of another person. So once we become less egotistical, we see the face of another person and we see more clearly. And so with my film company, kind of the going along with Corinthians 13, it's like if I talk in angelic tongues, if I write a script with angelic dialogue or something like that, but I have not love, then I'm just a resounding symbol. So I just really, it resonates with me of like kind of a verse that I can go to give me direction as a filmmaker.
So I just want to get people a chance to get to know you a little bit. So can you do me a favor? Tell me maybe a couple of people who you look up to. Are there individuals, whether they're living, dead, who you kind of have set up as role models? And what is it that you like about those people?
I mean, I've had several like mentors and professionally, so I definitely look up to the team at Spirit Juice, and just different people I meet in the community of filmmakers, even recently, have been role models for me. And then, like, you know, fiction, and I draw a lot from cinema too. So I'm a cinephile kind of. So I do spend a lot of time getting to know the different directors and their process, and maybe even their life a little bit, and just how they fit into the wider history of cinema. So I would definitely say that I have those professional artistic role models.
If you had to pick one of those people to go have a beer with and just kind of pick their brains and talk about film and art and beauty with, who would you want to go have a beer with?
I think P.T. Anderson for sure, as far as just drinking a beer, because I think I'd be intimidated by people like Tarkovsky or Kubrick, who I definitely would am like love as like interesting people. But I once saw an interview with P.T. Anderson where he's just like eating pizza in his interview. I'm like, this guy is too cool. So I think he'd be easy to talk to.
Awesome.
Do you have those people in your life where you're just like, I got to meet this? Like, do you have a bucket list of people you want to meet?
I do have a number of people in my life who I would love to meet. And at the end, you do get to ask me a question, but not right now. This is all about you, Sam. I just dialed in.
That's not fair.
Sam.
That is not fair.
It is fair. It would be unfair if I didn't let you pick one question at the end.
Okay.
Ask me. I'll even give you one for Father Perry since he's here with us also,
okay,
too.
Okay, I'll ask
so you can have two questions.
You're in front of the lens now, Sam.
Yeah, you're on the other side of the glass darkly.
There's no escaping the glass darkly.
No, I get it. It's one of those things. Actually, a lot of people seem really surprised when I let them ask me a question at the end. Like, oh, man, I don't know. So I love that you're actually going to be prepared for that and maybe have a list of them. What would a good day, like if you could have a day that, like just your ideal day, what would that look like? Could you walk me through kind of maybe what are some of the things you love to do or what would be a part of just a really phenomenal 24-hour experience for you?
Oh, wow. That's awesome. So I've been trying to become more disciplined. So trying to wake up early and doing a little routine, but I'm just terrible at it. So mainly I just like, I would love to have like a really disciplined, kind of morning routine. And I think that'd look like, getting up, going for a run, coming back, doing some yoga, drinking some coffee, and then reading, some biographies, maybe some scripture to start the morning. And then just going at, writing, scripts or, watching films and, then taking a break to for my wife to sit down and eat breakfast together. And just to me, I'm finding that my work is very, it's like a part of my life. It's part of my passion. And so I'm really integrating an artistic lifestyle where I'm working every day and it doesn't really feel like I'm working because I love what I do. But I'm also having to blend that with my family life, which is actually hard for me. Like I'm trying to find more time with my wife and so a perfect day would be a blend of those two things is family and work.
Just one more question to kind of give people a little bit of a sense of who you are. What's one experience you think that every person should have at least one time in their life?
I mean, I think it's falling in love. Maybe with a random stranger on a train. I think falling madly in love with someone. I wish that upon every person.
If somebody walked up to you on the street and asked you in a minute or less to explain to them what you believe, what would you tell them?
That's a weird question because of you mean like existentially or like what do you like believe about reality or God or
I'm asking if someone you didn't know walked up to you on the street and said, what do you believe? How you would respond to that?
Mm-hmm. So it's a random stranger. Is it a male or female?
Let's go with male at least first. Cause I may be curious about what you would say to a female.
So a dude comes up to me and says, what do you believe?
Yes.
Okay. I guess I would say, I believe that I am a small part of a large universe. And what I believe is probably wrong. Yeah. I don't put a lot of credit on belief. I don't think belief is very, I make a distinction between belief and faith, I guess, because, so my reaction is that belief always proves you're wrong. Like what I believe now is going to be different 5 years from now. Cause that's been the case in my life. And I hope for a lot of people, like what they believe is always shifting. To me, faith is a little more rock solid because it's disposition to God. It's saying, and it's an affirmation of life. So if I say what I believe now is always shifting, but but I have a, but I'm a religious person, and so I hold to faith as an affirmation that life is good and God is good.
That's a good response.
It's probably heretical. I just
kind of pooped myself a little.
If somebody asked you what religion you are, right? So you just talked about faith. If somebody asked you what religion you are, what would you say?
I would say I'm a Roman Catholic. Yeah.
You wouldn't say that you're like a, I'll save that joke for the end.
Okay.
A Dalmatian Catholic? I don't know where you're going with that.
Well, I was going to say something about you, your family owning like a Mexican Dalmatian fusion restaurant or something.
Yes. That needs to happen.
Yeah, it's like, you sound like a really super hot hipster restaurant in like Bridgeport.
Yep. There isn't one already, yeah.
I don't even know where to go from there. That's awesome.
Sorry, buddy.
I want to pivot real quick and just kind of get a sense, because we talked a little bit beforehand, but the reality is I don't really know a lot about your personal faith background, your family, or that much about you. Could you tell me a little bit about your family growing up?
Yeah, thanks for asking me that, too. I'm one of 11 kids. I grew up in a big family, two older sisters, a younger sister, then 7 younger brothers.
Wow.
Whoa. And yeah, so we're old school. We're half Mexican, half Dalmatian, from Croatia. And so we have this big family going, and that was all I knew growing up. I didn't really have a context for the other families making, you know, sex jokes and that's all I knew. Like, what I mean is, like, you know, other families, you'd go over to their house and be like, yeah, your mom and dad must really like to fuck, and then that was basically how it felt every time. They never really said that, but it was just like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, parents would say this to me and I'd be like, I'm just a little boy. So I grew up with that kind of in the back of my head of like, we're a little different as a family, and even myself, I'm a little different than my family, being in between the girls. And I'm part of the older side of the family. So we took care of the younger kids. And, but I was very, very, I'm probably the most spoiled in my family because I was the first boy. I just got away with a lot of stuff. And, I was really well behaved and everything, but also rebellious, if that makes sense. Like, never anything terrible, but like, I just didn't follow any rules.
A little mischievous.
Yeah, there you go. But then being a older brother was a big sense of responsibility for me. So that's why I was pretty straight edge through high school and stuff like that, trying to be an example.
If you had to name one thing that maybe you took away from the experience of being this older sibling who was kind of responsible for basically co-parenting a little bit, what's one thing you think that gave you at a young age that may have impacted some of the rest of your life?
I don't know if they call it co-parenting. Like, definitely my sisters took on a more parental kind of role, like, you know, babysitting and stuff like that. Myself, it was, I kind of made it possible to have a just fun time, like play games and to be the, like, create spaces of really creative, imaginative kind of activities. And so that's what I took upon myself, is like, I have this responsibility to shape the imaginations of my brothers. So that's one thing was, being creative at a young age and having a lot of siblings to do that with is one of the best blessings of my life.
Do you think that plays into the way that you currently do your art? Does that play into a way that you currently think about film or shooting or anything else like that as you're making decisions?
I think so. I don't know how, though. So that's not a very good answer, but it's got to be there.
It's true. It's a great answer.
Yes.
No, that's great. Was your family, did your family have a certain religious practice or religious background?
Yeah, we were definitely, definitely religious, definitely, you know, Catholicism was always a big part of my life. But it was almost just cultural. I never took it seriously until I had a kind of a religious conversion in high school. So it was something I did. It was something I was interested in. I was just one of those kids that, like, because it was taught pretty regularly at home, like, I knew a little bit more of, like, the Bible stories maybe than the other kids at school. And my parents definitely kind of maybe sheltered us a little bit. Like, we didn't have TV growing up, and the kind of entertainment that we saw was, like, really like, I don't know what you call it, just family friendly stuff. And I wasn't allowed to watch PG-13 movies throughout the 90s. So I just saw Jaws the other night for the first time. That was a really good movie, by the way.
Let me ask, I know Father Paris has a question. Let me ask a question real quick, just because I'm always curious. Did your family get, like, a once or twice a year in the mail, just yes. box of really crappy knockoff VHS videos that were, like, family friendly entertainment? Because my parents did that, I think, quarterly.
Yes, and there's some gems in there. Like, there's some really shitty films in there, but there's, like, some gems.
Did you ever watch the Buttercream Game?
That's what I was gonna say. Like, what a great movie for a young kid. You know the scene in there where the kid gets his bike stolen, and he's like, you if you need it so bad, you can have it, and, like, that, I think, has been one of the most formative ethical lessons in my life. It's just like, if my house gets robbed, they need it more than I do. And I'm not attached to any of this shit. Mm. So.
Wow. This is remarkably different. My dad forced me to watch Rocky Horror Picture Show when I was 12.
That's different.
But yeah.
Wait, did he make you act out the different parts?
No. Okay. No. But he did for Metropolis. My dad also made me watch Metropolis when I was 7.
That's yeah. Fine.
But that was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
But Sam, going back to this, you know, kind of your family of origin kind of upbringing and everything like this, and you said that you had a conversion in high school or some kind of reversion. Tell me about that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess I would call it a reversion where I just took my faith seriously after a retreat that I went on, and leading up to that, like, I was, so I always tell the story like this. Like, I was really, passionate about art, and people knew me for my art. Like, I was kind of winning awards and stuff. Like, I was on this track to go to, the Art Institute in Chicago. Like, I got this scholarship, and I was into theater, and we had this weekly television show that we put on. So as far as, like, what you could, like, popularity in high school goes, like, that's kind of how we basically, like, ran the school. Like, they loved our show, like, the show that we made so much that I never went to class my senior year because we were just making films for the school. And so, that kind of became, like, my identity, and people knew me from it. And then I had this, I went to an Kairos retreat, and I had this moment in front of the Eucharist, and it was kind of just like this, whatever it was, this bubbling up of emotions. And I had a realization that what my faith was a really big gift to me, and how can I use my talents to kind of give back to the church or give back to the faith community. And right away I heard, like, the priesthood, like, this is so. So I didn't know anything about seminary, and I didn't know, you know, what people did to become a priest, but I wanted to do that. And that was my last year of high school, and I had this, like, basically this 180 in my life where I was known in school for, like, being the artsy kid, and then I just became, like, this religious kid. But I really got involved with just wanting to learn more about what it would mean to become a priest. And then I went to St. John Vianney the following year, and stayed there for 3 years. And it was, like, the worst 3 years of my life, but that maybe we'll get to that. But, it was a really profound experience that definitely changed my life. So it's part of my religious journey for sure.
What do you mean change your life?
It changed my life because it put me on, it was just a directional turn in what I was interested in and how I wanted to live my life. So, feeling called to the priesthood, as you know, is, just a soul shattering thing. So, and it's a calling. So you hear it and you need to go. And you need to try do your best to answer that call. And I guess what I mean by call is just kind of like that disposition or trying to find yourself within, the ministry of potentially being a priest, like just trying to navigate, the rules set up in the Catholic Church of like what it means to minister as a priest. It's really specific and not a lot of people get it. And I did, and it was very, discombobulating. Like it's crazy for when people hear the call, like I don't even know what that is. The Holy Spirit or some psychological like longing, maybe a mix of all of that. I don't know.
At what point were you able to kind of refuse or like to fuse together again this artistic sentiment, this artistic force in you, and also this religious or spiritual force in you?
Right.
So when did his faith and his art meet?
Yeah. When did they come back together again?
Yeah. So I guess I would explain it like, I never thought they would be apart until I went to seminary or until I got a little more deep into like Catholic culture. And I'll try to spell that out. Like what I mean is like, so I had this kind of full speed ahead on artistic career. And then I also had this full speed ahead on pursuing, seminary and the priesthood. And I thought they were going to mesh really well because I always saw the talents I had as an artist could definitely serve the church. But what I found when I got deeper into Catholic culture, and what I mean by that is like, how do I behave now? Like I never used to talk like a Catholic. I never used to, be interested in what people were talking about in those circles. And then learning the language and learning the culture, there was a rupture between this full speed ahead artistic path because the types of conversations that I was drawn into were just more sentimental, I would say, or just kind of like even an over-spiritualized version of the faith. And because it was the only thing I knew at the time, like I thought the whole church was like that. I thought, everyone was like this. And so I adapted. But I definitely went through a dry spell. And a lot of weird, kind of like a weird artistic period, because I thought what I had to be doing was drawing like myself being held in the arms of Mary, or like just I was obsessed with like drawing like different depictions of Christ, or just really hyper Catholic kind of art, and it always felt like is this the only subject that I have to depict and like now? So, so I would say at that early stage, it was a real, entering the culture, which was not appreciative or even against other types of art that I was, kind of more used to, and even language I was more used to, different conversations I was more used to. I just turned that side of me off because I had to adapt to a culture that I wanted to become a priest in. So that's what happened. And it took too much of a toll on me because in seminary, like that's when I really saw, at least the particular seminary I was at, that when you, I guess I want to explain it like this. Like, I needed more time to go through what I was going through. And when you're at seminary, it's kind of like a pressure cooker because they expect you not to doubt and they expect you to conform. And just at myself as an artist, and I think that just must be it. My personality didn't allow me to conform and to and yeah, I needed to go through a period of doubt intellectually, and I needed to explore a lot more. And so with the pressure of, oh, I need to become a priest now, and the other kind of, I went through like a period of depression and eating disorder in seminary, and I was just trudging through it because I thought that this is what was the road to my vocation, and so I had to go through like this hell, but it wasn't the right place for me at all.
I mean that I'm sorry it sucks so much, but in some ways I'm happy you're here.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, if your experience led to good discernment, right? Like that's fruitful, and that's what seminary is hopefully going to do in guys' lives, help them decide, am I called to this or not called to this, right? Ideally, that would be a gentle process, but that's not the case most of the time when we have real spiritual change or discernment taking place. It's hard, right?
Yeah, I don't think I did good discernment. It like chewed me up and spit me out, and this discernment happened over the next couple of years outside of the seminary because I felt really bitter with the type of culture that was being fostered at the particular seminary I was at. It was very clerical. It was very down on laity, down on women to an extent, and not questioning that type of there's just a lot wrong that I sensed, and it took me a while to see that the rest of the church wasn't as I guess I don't even know what the words are, but
dickish.
dickish is a good one. So
let's talk about a little bit about your religious practice. So do you think that a personal relationship with God is possible?
In that I'm a person and I'm in relationship with God somehow. But there's always a danger of some idolatry in that, right? So like what we believe about God, it says more about us than about God. So in that you are a person and you're trying to be a religious person, that forms you as a person, and that's what makes it personal. And also that God is probably a person, like he's persons. So I don't know. That's my answer.
That's good. What does your prayer life look like? Do you have a prayer life?
I would like to be more disciplined in prayer for sure. As I'm getting kind of older after being married, I think for 2 years, it's kind of forced me to look harder at my personal growth and my holiness, I guess. And because there's another person involved and maybe, you know, hopefully more as far as I extend my family. So, yes, I have so much to grow in that, but personal prayer, I felt like I've gone through a lot of experiences, that dealt with, a lot of pain in relationship to my faith and my faith community at first. And, I've been able to respond to that pain by seeking maybe a more kind of mystical spirituality, whatever that means, just more, attentive to, the imminence of God. And, so I find, my personal prayer, focuses on, a lot of it has to do with imagination and trying to find God in all things, I guess. But because my vocation, I'm finding that my vocation is as an artist and a filmmaker, to allow kind of my day-to-day work be consecrated. I don't usually use those words, but I'm constantly thinking about religious things. I'm constantly thinking about Christ and how he, you know, is just, I can try to manifest that in my work. And it's funny because, like, while I'm obsessed with religious things, I also notice that they're also like whenever I'm not, so this is gonna be incredibly personal and I don't care if you cut it out or whatever, but like on the screen, like this morning I was watching like, or I was reading like some church father and what he said about this. And then in the same tab, like, you know, you have like, pornography on the other end. And, so there's this constant like battle between the religiously obsessed and then just the man and just the person that I need to change, I guess. But I don't know. I hope that's a lot of people's experience, I think that's a lot of people's experience. I mean, where even if you're religiously obsessed, it doesn't stop you from the things in your life you need to work on. And that, I don't know, that's something that's really clear to me lately.
Is one way of putting this like saying that like God is not scandalized by your BS.
Mm-hmm.
And that he's okay with dwelling with you in that, you know, in that mire.
Yeah, he's okay. I don't want to be okay with it. I, you know, it forces me to look at the dichotomy in my life because another thing that motivates me. So it used to be the fear of hell. And then I stopped believing in the devil for a while. But what motivates me now is like, I'm just not as productive. And to live out my vocation as an artist and a father or a husband, like, I got to have some harmony in my life. And there's some obvious dichotomies that I have to work on. And, that's what motivates me is there's these external motivations now. So I'm really glad for those. Namely my wife.
Amen for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really appreciate just your willingness to share that very personal reality. I mean, like that's in these conversations, my favorite point is when someone decides that, hey, I could just BS right now, or I could give an easy or simple response, but I'd rather actually just tell you about my own experience, my own woundedness, like the reality of it and share that with you. And not worry about how you're going to respond to that, because it's actually helpful for me to just be able to name a thing honestly and truly. So I thank you for that. I would love to hear a little bit about what you're working on right now. Like, I know I've seen different clips of things you've done. I know you've been a part of other people's projects that I've seen or I've been connected to. But what are you working on right now?
Sure. Yeah. So I would say there's two projects I'm working on, and I'll, one briefly is a documentary on Rene Girard, who is kind of very influential in the last couple years of my life, and a really interesting subject to jump into from a formal perspective of documentary, and then just the subject of his work as a thinker. So that's
tell me
one.
For those who don't know of whom I am one, who is that?
Okay, so yeah, Rene Girard is
Girard is basically the shit.
Yeah, in summed up, yeah, he's a French Catholic anthropologist / literary critic who kind of put forward this theory of mimesis, which is a theory that he says that all our desires are mimetic, and that what we desire in life is because we see other people desiring them, and so we do so, and that leads to violence. And then he has all these kind of game-changing kind of theories about if this is the case that our desires are imitative, then it goes all the way back to kind of the foundations of who we are as humans. And so that he has this a theory of hominization and of culture that kind of culminates into through the Old Testament into the New Testament, and he basically gives this the only convincing reading of the Bible that I've ever heard. And so I'm Girardian as much as I can go, and I think again, he's the shit. So but again, you can be critical of it and everything. And for me, it's a way of looking at my own desires, and it keeps me from participating in kind of like different rivalries that inevitably happen, and a different part of my psyche that I normally wouldn't if I wasn't aware of his literature, namely like envy or
Is there, if you had to give people a suggestion on one piece of his work that you think they should engage in to start with, what would that be?
So his work's pretty academic and it's pretty dry. But at the same time, if you can stomach that, it's also just really fascinating. But I would start with, there's a David Cayley interview on the BBC. Sorry, not the BBC, the CBC, Canada Broadcast Radio. And you just type in David Cayley. Ideas, I think, is the name of the show. And then Rene Girard, and he talks about, it's like a five-hour series on Rene describing his theory. So I'd cool. start there. Yep.
Awesome. So what's the other project?
The other project is, it's an anthology film based on the Eight Beatitudes. It's called Eight Beats. And it kind of was spawned through the kind of budding relationships of the Catholic filmmaking community. That was just this ad hoc group on Facebook. And then we partnered with the Catholic Creatives community, which is also just a Facebook group for aspiring artists and people of faith.
Think it's just a Facebook group. I hear it's like a whole new renaissance.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
cult.
Sorry.
Could be.
I am kidding. I have friends on there.
Fair enough. It's an organic community, so it has its flaws, but it also has a lot of benefits for people working professionally. Namely that you can share your work and you build feedback. I think why there's this call to this renaissance, I think that's a response to finally there's this place and that we can, that there's a conversation happening that isn't an echo chamber, and that it seems really like there's ironing, sharpening iron. So basically the group has taken on the project called Eight Beats, which was an idea I had kind of inspired by the Decalogue, which is a 1970s Polish television series that looks at the Ten Commandments in filmic form and in these hour long episodes. And we're doing it in eight short films. And I think the most exciting part is that we're doing it on a very wide, these regional teams. So what makes it interesting to me is that we can work together across large spanning geographical areas on a single project, and that's what's cool.
Yeah, and so that's the thing. It's a collaborative project, right? It's eight different teams across the country, each working on their own short film that's going to be a part of this anthology. And it's based on the Beatitudes. So the goal is really just to create a really crappy Christian movie set, right? That's the goal, that we can send out on VHS tapes to little boys all over the world to change their life. No, right. So I mean, but that's the thing. They're not. I mean, I've seen the previews for these because I'm part of the Catholic Creatives group, even though I have no discernible creative skills. The previews on these, some of the stuff I'm seeing come out of them, they're very different than most people would think about if they heard collaborative Catholic film anthology. So besides the way that you guys are organized, what makes this film unique? What kind of is the lens or the view you're trying to take this through that's going to make this a unique and worthwhile experience?
Yeah, so I think one unique thing is that we want to concentrate on story, and we don't want to cater to the mainstream Catholic audience or the religious audience, but to not have a overly moralizing message, but to really just be inspired by the Beatitudes and what they can mean for the everyday person who and what they mean to us, like personally. So, so what makes it different, I guess, is like we're not feeling that we are constrained by I guess a rating system or like a need to proselytize, and we're trying to be edgy. We're trying to speak the language that we encounter in our own lives. Like I think for a lot of religious people, like in a sense, there is this double life that we live because there's the secular and then there's your religious community, and a lot of times that's not really easy to I guess have in harmony. I messed up again. I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe we talk through it together because you're part of the project too. I just can't.
They wouldn't take my money when I was trying to give money originally. I had $100,000 lined up to give. I'm not actually directly involved in any of them. I'm just part of the group. I love it. I support it. I'll support it financially also too, for real, but I just haven't gone back to actually sign up for it. But I didn't end up on any of the regional teams. I just think it's a great and phenomenal project. I think what you were saying was great. I'll find enough between those two cuts to edit something.
Yeah, please do.
Get out of it. But I do. Let's dive into that a little bit more. So,
well, I guess, yeah, what is interesting to you about the project?
Here's what I want to say. I know that a lot of the script cuts I've seen, because I have seen a couple of them, and a lot of the story outlines I've seen are really not what people would expect from a Catholic movie series. So are you involved in one of the teams directly? What's the beatitude you guys have? And can you give us like a little taste of what the story is? Is that allowed?
Yes and no. Like I've been going back and forth between like telling the story and then keeping it secret. Cause there's a sense of, shock that I want to have, I guess, but I'll tell you the little synopsis. So I'm writing and directing one of the scripts, and our beatitude is, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. And along with just the script as a prompt, we're also encouraged to include our regional the region that we're a part of. So ours is the Midwest, and I was looking at like peace symbolism and definitely looking at like nonviolent stuff, kind of literature and stuff like that. And then I came across the Calumet Peace Pipe, which is a pipe that for the Native Americans is a very mysterious or just very sacred object, and it kind of dictates their war time and peace time. And so also being part of the region, the story is about Jacques Marquette and his time in Chicago dying of diarrhea in a hut. So we're going for it, and we're going to try to depict kind of what it's like for the first European to be in Chicago. And if you're from Chicago or have been to Chicago in the winter, you know it's an ordeal, and for Marquette to be the first one and to be a man of peace, a man of the Beatitudes, he's kind of become like a patron saint of Chicago for me. And I'm looking forward to depicting this time in his life and the relationships around it. So
yours is basically a historical retelling.
It is. Yeah. So like all of it is an actual events, but I think I take some liberties, as far as like in the historical text, the manuscripts that I've read, I'm kind of reading in between the lines, but trying to stay close to the spirit of it.
But I know that some of the other ones are just, they're fictional, right? They're just that somebody wrote a script and put it together. So the reality is you guys each are bringing your own unique talents to bear in this thing and making it really, letting each team really own their own creative process, it sounds like.
Yeah. So I should say that like mine's actually like one of the rules that we kind of put forward was, it shouldn't be religious content. And so I kind of broke that rule, cause I made the rule, I can do it. And,
which one of the Ambrosio brothers yelled at you?
As soon as I typed it, they all commented on it.
They both yelled it in stereo.
No. I lost my train of thought now. I was going to say, mine is not to be, mine's kind of an outlier. It's kind of an exception to the rule. So, the rest of them are not in a religious kind of setting. Like, some of the ones that I'm excited about depict, a heroin addict, kind of, going through, her time right after rehab. And, the other ones are, just as, well, I don't know. So a lot of them are in this, the creative process still, but there's a creative freedom, with all the teams. So
people want to find out more about 8Beats or get involved. How do they do that?
So if you want to find out more, just go to the website, www.8beatsmovie.com, and Beats is BEATS. And, you can get involved. Right now, we're going through our fundraising campaign. I don't know how much shelf life this episode has, but we're trying to meet our $50,000 goal, and we really need your help. And if you are a person that is frustrated with religious art, if you're a person that loves cinema, if you're a person who loves Catholicism and want to encourage artists to live out their vocations, then help us make this film, because it will be the first of many projects that we hope to shift the culture to a new aesthetic, a new Catholic wave, a Catholic new wave.
Awesome. So I know earlier you were really struggling because you could just not ask Father Parrish and I some questions. So after all that, are there any questions that you would like to ask us?
No.
That's awesome.
You were just uncomfortable.
No, I wanted it to be more of a conversation. No, I wanted to get to know you guys for sure. What are your favorite films?
Okay, so I have probably one not serious and two serious.
Okay,
so one not serious is probably, I would say, I don't know, maybe like The Sandlot.
Okay.
But my two serious ones, the ones that I'll go back to often, go back often to, are Tarkovsky's Stalker,
mm-hmm.
and then Terrence Malick's Tree of Life.
Right.
Answers are going to be very different.
Yeah.
In the sense of, I kid you not, one of my favorite movies of all time is Josie and the Pussycats, starring Rachel Lee Cook.
Oh, yeah.
From the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
The soundtrack in that, along with the dialogue, are killer. There's a lot of great meta humor, which is really kills me. And I like the soundtrack too. And so there's that. I also like, man, I'm trying to think of it right now. Forbidden Planet with Leslie Nielsen. It's an old black and white movie that was technicolored later, about guys who crash land on this planet, and they find this doctor and his daughter living there, and there's this monster that starts attacking them, and it's just kind of this exploration of man's inner monster also too. I'm a big sci-fi fan.
Nice.
So it's the best and worst of what makes sci-fi good and bad, and so that's another one that I
thought you were going to say Forbidden Planet, which is a 1960s French cartoon.
I've also seen that.
Yeah.
Because when ordering it at one point, I was like, oh, here's another one. What's that? And ordered both of them just to see. And yeah, they're two very different movies.
Yeah.
But I do love the French one also, too, actually.
Yeah, that's good.
If people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Yeah, you can visit my Facebook page, email, samuelsorge@gmail.com. I'm happy. It seems like at this point in my career that I'm totally open to meeting random strangers and seeing where people are at and wanting to collaborate more. So yeah, I definitely welcome people to talk with me. And if you're into film, if you want recommendations on films, like that's been becoming more apparent that I want to start kind of providing for people and stuff like that. So yeah, please do.
My last question for you before you go was, if would you be comfortable if we prayed for you?
Oh, please.
Like right now.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah, cool. Is there anything specific you want prayer for?
I'm it's more just like Thanksgiving. Like I'm super lucky to be part of these conversations, and I just, so praise and Thanksgiving.
Awesome. All right, Father Parrish, I'm going to start. You can close this out, though. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Good and gracious God, we just thank you for Sam, for the time we were able to spend with him today, for the beers he's going to buy me next week when I'm in Chicago. We just offer up to you our gratitude for his presence, for his perspective, for the deep creativity that you place in him, but also, God, for a desire to become a more integrated version of himself. We just ask you to continue to give him the good things that you desire for him, to watch over him always, and to hold him.
Holy Father, we know that you have given us such a gift in our creativity and the ability to be able to convey who we are, which is a reflection of yourself. I really ask that you continue to give Sam a desire for you, and a desire to be able to simply be a creative human being. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Catholic Creatives is a community of artists, filmmakers, entrepreneurs, marketing people, designers. All of us just care deeply about this one thing, about bringing about a new renaissance in the church.
We're excited to announce the first ever Catholic Creatives collaborative project, which is a full-length anthology film called 8 Beats. It will be produced by the Catholic Creatives community and over 70 of the top Catholic filmmakers working in the United States and Canada.
We're all going to be split into 8 regions, and we're going to create 8 different short films, one on each of the Beatitudes.
The Beatitudes are universally known as some of the richest and most profound teachings of Christ in the Scriptures.
We want to tell stories that speak to our modern human experience. We want to take a look at the brokenness in our lives, point to it, and say that there's hope here.
What are we trying to accomplish in this ridiculously crazy project of 8 Beats?
We're trying to accomplish something that hasn't been ever done before.
There hasn't been a way for us to collaborate across the world with each other. But now, through this common mission and through this digital continent that Pope Benedict talked about, we are able to share our information with each other, our understanding, our talents, and to be able to work in a massive way on the same project.
You know, we have a lot of really good filmmakers from across the country with a lot of really good ideas, and all it needs now is people's financial support.
I think we have the opportunity to make something incredibly beautiful, incredibly original and powerful. To do that, we need support. We need your help.
No one has ever filmed the Beatitudes in a way where it speaks to our modern experience.
When I think about making this film with the resources that are really necessary to do it the right way, I get so excited that we could not only tell this story, but have the means to tell it in a way that's beautiful and powerful and truthful, and that supports the Catholic artists who are giving their talents to this project to make it a reality.
Really grateful and honored by anyone who's willing to help us make this project a reality. Thank you so much.
8 Beats is a massive collaboration. I haven't seen anything else like it in the Catholic world. And I think that we're only at the very starting point of tapping the potential that we have as a community.
Individually, we have a very powerful voice. We can speak from our own experiences, from our own times, from our own worldviews. But when we unite our voice with other people who can see more of the picture than we can see, we can have something that we're proud of, not just because we did it individually or alone, but we did it together as a family.
So, Father, what stood out at you from Sam's experience? What resonated with you? What connected with you?
Well, as I took some notes with my left hand because I was lazy and I can't read them because it's my left hand and I'm a righty. But first off, actually, you know, what really was really kind of resonated with me, and I don't know if I want to affirm it in the sense of I want to affirm that it's a crappy thing, right? Is that experience of being in seminary and feeling like you're an outsider or you're rushed. That there isn't, that there can be an unhealthy culture because you're a whole bunch of broken dudes.
Right.
That really did resonate with my experience.
Did you ever feel like the process was kind of pushing you through? Did you ever feel like a lack of control over that?
I did not. However, he actually gave me some good vocabulary to reflect on because he helped me reflect on it in a different way in that relation to that question, which is there is a lot of pressure that you are sure, right? And that, the only reason I was able to make it through my seminary was because my sense of vocation really was pretty solid. Now, I did have doubts, but they were usually more on my end. Like my doubts around my vocation were around whether or not I can do it, right? Whether or not I'm willing to say yes. Right. Not so much about the objectivity of it. And so, but that being said, that's a pretty firm ground to work from. Right. And, or at least that's it's easier to work from that place in a lot of ways. Whereas, I remember thinking to myself, like with some other guys, like, hey, bud, like just get with the game here. Da, 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 da. Right. And that's, maybe I'll have to make some reparation for that.
Yeah.
Because it's not anyway, he helped me there. He really helped me there. Like to reconsider some of my experience. The other thing that helped me with what he said was the thing that really resonated with me was, yeah, just this feeling of difference. Like it was a huge culture shock going into seminary for me, coming out of the Navy and then right into seminary, continuing to like music, continuing to like movies and art, right? And not finding any real conduit for that, outlet for that, because guys were, at least at initial points of formation, especially at college seminary, were just kind of really busybodies and posturing themselves a lot of the time, and major seminary was not nearly.
Tell me the names of those guys. Give me some examples. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that.
No, thank you. But yeah, when you have a whole bunch of dudes who are posturing themselves, right, that's not healthy. And I really resonated with that. And it didn't happen almost at all in major seminary, but there still was a culture shift, but I was actually really accepted for it. Like people were saying, hey, here's that Seattle guy. And we know that you're with us. We just also want to just continually point out how different you are because it makes us laugh. and I can accept that.
Yeah. So I really, I do something I try to do with seminarians that are assigned to us for just a little bit of time. I don't remember how much I did it with you or not, but just also pointing out, like, you're called to be a seminarian right now, not a priest. And I think for Sam, it came out pretty strong that people were just like, oh, so you're going to be a priest. And I think that's actually
not helpful.
Not helpful, right?
Yeah.
And so.
It's being a seminarian is definitely different. The other thing I really wanted something that was affirmed that I want to affirm and just really. Was helpful for me was I thought that was a really great distinction he made between faith and belief.
Yeah.
The way that he made that. I think that, one's about, a relationship that you receive, if I can reformulate that. And one is about your best ability at the moment to be able to comprehend that. And comprehend reality, and maybe that will change.
Yeah. I mean, I think about it in the way it's almost a perception and reality thing, right? Like, so I may feel a certain way about something that is happening or about something that in and of itself does not change that thing necessarily. It does change how I interact with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that should be changing and growing and evolving, but it doesn't necessarily change the thing itself.
Yeah.
Right. My feelings about that chair doesn't change my chair. And actually, it's really actually amazing to think about relationships that way. Like, I think we have a tendency to think about relationships as our perception of them. Mm-hmm. Right. And certainly in a relationship, there probably is more impact that our perception has to a certain capacity. But some relationships, like my perception of my relationship with my wife, is not the same thing as my relationship with my wife. It is separate, which is good because my wife and I can actually be doing really well, even if I don't feel like we are, or yeah, or whatever.
Whatever. Yeah, exactly.
And the same thing, even in a friendship, like if I know I've committed to a friendship with somebody, like, and I have made that commitment, just because I'm not feeling like I want to hang out with them that day because of my own stuff or because of something, it doesn't change the fact that we are still friends.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
So I think that's amazing. I was really kind of struck by it. And I was trying to think of the way to evolve it. I feel like Sam's got this really amazing interplay of how he's trying to really integrate himself. Like the term integration and disintegration kind of kept on coming to mind for me. Mm-hmm. When he was talking about his ideal day, right? Just the sense of what I do and this real fusion and wholeness to me bringing me to reality, I think spoke of this deep sense of integration. And then some of the more personal moments he said, kind of showing these places where he's disintegrated and still working on that. But that in and of itself is actually kind of a sign of he's aware of those things, right? He knows these moments that kind of identify where he's not being fully realized in himself. And totally. So that was really impressive to me. And that really connected with me because I had a really profound moment, I want to say 2 years ago now, after teaching a class one night where I just came home feeling really crappy. And I realized it was because I felt like a hypocrite. It wasn't because anything I said I didn't believe or didn't value, but it was that I was living in this place where I was presenting an idea of myself rather than actually just being myself. Mm. And that realization let me deal with that, move it aside, and really firmly integrate a little bit more intentionally.
Yeah, totally.
Anything else?
No.
Sam, thanks so much for sitting down with us. So Father Parrish, if people want to find us online, they need to go to, do you remember?
Thresholdpodcast.fm.
Excellent. And you can go there if you want to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, a couple other players out there. So if you can't find us in the store, which we should be searchable in whatever store you're looking through, you can always go to thresholdpodcast.fm. If you want to share any of your thoughts or anything else like that, please go to thresholdpodcast.fm/contact. You can call in and leave a message or leave a message straight from your web browser to let us know what your thoughts were about any episode. So thank you guys so much. We're always looking forward to your support, and we'll talk to you soon. Get out there, FNF ability, and talk about what really matters.